Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Let us help you escape your mind.
Folks, welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. We have episode number 214 today. We have a special guest back on, Dr. Rick Strassman. And before we get started here, he does have a YouTube channel that's up and kicking, so go check that out. I have the link down below. And before we, let's see here, let's do this too. We are going to have some questions for a Patreon segment afterwards, so if you're interested, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For just $2 a month, you'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments, including the one that we're going to do today. I did upload one with Matthew Clark, who wrote the book Botanical Ecstasies from the last episode that we did regarding Soma, and check that out. It's pretty interesting as well. And one more thing, head on over to indrasweb.org. This is the social media platform we created to connect open minds. So whether we're talking about this subject or similar subjects, metaphysics, whatever it is, it's a perfect place to do it. You can sign up there, and we are still working on getting it in the App Store. So, oh, one more thing. If you're interested, we are going to do a giveaway at the end of the month. Here's a picture of our Mind Escape t-shirt. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple and take a screenshot, send it to our email, and we're going to pick a winner at the end of the month. So go check that out as well. Let's get into this real quick, but I'm going to do a little intro because he does deserve it. Dr. Strassman is currently an American Clinical Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine. From 1990 to 1995, Dr. Strassman led a government-approved and funded clinical research team at the University of New Mexico studying the effects of N,N-dimethyltryptamine, or DMT, on human subjects in experimental conditions. Dr. Strassman is the president and co-founder of the Cottonwood Research Institute. He is also the author of DMT, the Spirit Molecule, Inner Paths to Outer Space, DMT, the Soul of Prophecy, and Joseph Levy Escapes Death. Glad to have you back on, Rick. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to see you. Good, Mike.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Last time we focused a lot on like the science and the new science, and it was very science heavy, and I didn't think we got to any of the mystical or metaphysical aspects of this. So I figured we'd do a little bit of that, and then maybe towards the end we'll get back into some more of the scientific questions. But something I've been theorizing and throwing around for a long time now has been the idea that psychedelics are the source of our understanding and fascination with metaphysics. And I think that this could probably go back to the dawn of civilization. Do you think psychedelics are the inspiration for where we get the idea of gods, geometry being the building blocks of reality, and there might be realms beyond our senses, stuff like that?
Well, if you want a kind of a broad definition of what I think that psychedelics do, is they make the previously invisible visible. So where the location of what used to be invisible is can be, debated. Is it just a chemical reaction in your brain on drugs, or is it perceiving things that exist out, to the outside of us, which we're now able to perceive? So, I think that, that both of those possibilities would fall under the larger umbrella of making the previously invisible now visible. So that, I think, pertains to the role of thought and ideas. You can have ideas and thoughts that you aren't aware of, or you're barely aware of, you don't believe are true, you've looked at them and discarded them, but they're still rattling around. I think that psychedelics can focus a light on things that you've been thinking but have been unconscious of, for example. So you need to have the raw material in the first place to come up with an idea of God or of metaphysics or of the spiritual things that we feel but don't see. So if, you know, someone is an atheist, for example, and they've wondered about, is there a God or not, and I just need more proof, they trip, they take a psychedelic, and they, you know, focus on the area of doubt, like, I wonder if there's a God. Oh, I feel that there is a God, and I'm sure now that there is one. You know, so they come back from their trip now believing in God. But the, you know, kernel of the idea was there originally. You know, whether you perceive other worlds or not, like dark matter or parallel universes, you know, I think that's a really tough thing to even experimentally question. So, you know, it's interesting to speculate about, and some young student out there might want to take that on as a project to photograph the contents of invisible worlds and then compare them to the DMT state. But I think we're some time off from that kind of information.
Yeah, I always ask our guests, especially when we're talking about metaphysics and psychedelics and stuff like that, have you seen the gods, you know, or have you experienced anything surreal in day-to-day consciousness? And, you know, I've experienced a lot of weird things, but in day-to-day consciousness, I haven't really experienced all too much of that. You know, obviously I've never experienced the gods or God or anything like that, but in altered states, psychedelic states, deep meditation, these are some things that you can kind of have these weird mystical experiences and experience those things. So I do think that there is something to that. And as you mentioned, it could be something that's already manifested in the mind previously that comes out in those experiences.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the strong points of the term psychedelic. It means mind manifesting or mind exposing,
right.
Mind disclosing. You know, so it isn't the case that those ideas are new, but they're being manifested in a new way.
Hmm. Absolutely. After conducting the DMT experiments, did you look for archetypes or similarities between the experiments? The different experiences that the subjects had, did you find any like crossover there? And if so, was there anything that you found that was interesting?
Well, you know, the typical experience on a high dose of DMT is, you know, it can be generalized. Most people go through the same stages. You know, it begins quickly. If you smoke it or inject it, it begins quickly. There's a rush. With a lot of inert attention and a feeling of acceleration, some anxiety, and then you lose awareness of your body as the world breaks up visually, and you enter into a world of light which is full of content, full of material. You're witnessing it, you're able to interact with it. Yeah, and it's more real than real. That's one of the striking comments that was quite frequent. Yeah, and then it peaks in a few minutes. You start coming down at around 10 minutes. You're able to drink tea and answer questionnaires at 25 minutes.
And you administered it intravenously. I think David Nichols synthesized it for you for those experiments. How different do you think the experience is between that and, let's say, smoking it or something like that?
Well, a couple of our volunteers had smoked DMT previously, and they described the intravenous infusion as just a little bit quicker, but still, it's pretty quick. I mean, within a few heartbeats, you begin to feel the effect.
Hmm. And I already touched upon another question regarding that, the experience, but it sounds like I think we already got to that with the preconceived ideas or possible biases of the brain going into these experiments.
I mean, that bespeaks the importance of, you know, what is intrinsic, you know, to the drug. Is it, you know, the drug that's doing the work or is responsible, you know, for the content, or is it the person? Hmm. And I think, you know, the drug is a way of that person getting in closer in touch with themselves. In the case of DMT, you know, the visions are quite striking, and are the feelings that one experiences in beholding the visions, and the information that you glean from the state. And even the visions can be reduced, I think, to the personality of the person experiencing it. In a way, they're kind of like, you know, dreams. They're symbolic of other things that you can articulate. So, for example, if it's a monster that, you know, that you see, you can ask them, you know, who does that remind you of? It could be your dad. It could be your boss. So the you know, visions are specific to the person, and the interpretation of the visions is dependent on the person. So, you know, that kind of indicates the importance of developing your mind and your psychology as, you know, best you can in anticipation of, you know, getting the most out of any psychedelic experience.
So one woman in the Spirit Molecule mentions surfing her DNA backwards at light speed. And then you have Jeremy Narby, who wrote The Cosmic Serpent, talking about DNA and that, and, you know, biological stuff mixed with the shamanic practices and everything. And then you have a few people, you know, we've had a few people on the show mention the idea that DMT entities might be some sort of epigenetic memory of past lives or consciousness. Why and how do you think DNA relates to the DMT experience?
Well, how does DMT and DMT? Well, a long time ago, actually, there were studies indicating that DMT intercalates between the two strands of DNA. It can you know, fit in the space which is created by the double helix, you know, like the two nucleotides or nucleosides. You know, so it may be able to change the conformation of DNA, which, you know, would affect its transcription. You know, that, you know, does bespeak genetic influence, epigenetic effects, but boy, it's pretty speculative at that.
And if anybody's interested on Rick's channel that he's beefing up now, he does have the clip from the last show we did with him where Maurice kind of made some visuals associated with him telling us of his experience with Terrence McKenna and Graham Hancock. With his, you know, I think you mentioned the entities and stuff like that. Do you have your own ideas of what the entities are, or do you just kind of read all the research and listen to all the people's stories and keep evolving your own picture on that?
Well, I think at the most, you know, basic level, the entities provide us information that we weren't aware of before. They, you know, help us, you know things about ourselves that we didn't know before. You know, you're referring to my interview with Graham Hancock a couple of years ago in Sedona, and I spoke about the first time I smoked DMT. It was with Terrence McKenna, and yeah, I could kind of use as an example, you know, the entities that I saw. There were these, you know, maybe half a dozen humanoid-like beings, maybe 4 feet tall, emerging out of a waterfall, this flaming, colorful waterfall. And they just, you know, bore in on me and said, you know, telepathically, you know, now do you see, now do you see, now do you see, you know, just over and over. You know, so, you know, what does that mean? Where did they come from? What do they mean by now do you see? And I think it's a reflection of, you know, who I am at, you know, who I am now, you know, who I was at the time, kind of, you know, searching for, you know, for answers to, you know, very difficult, you know, to respond to questions. You know, now do you see, you know, what's the ultimate meaning of life? You know, what are you doing with yourself? What's the world about? Yeah, you know, so now do you see, now do you see? Well, I'm not really sure, so I need to investigate further. Yeah, you know, so that was a specific message that was intended for me to help me focus or to become more aware. But, you know, but it was, you know, quite personal, too.
Oh, absolutely. In terms of the entities too. Some people suggest that it's probably, or it could be part of our subconscious or us speaking to ourselves through the mind, or just stuff that's like layered way down in there that's coming to the surface or something like that. The thing that I find interesting, though, is that when people describe them, they do feel external to most people. Like, they do feel like something else. They don't really feel like you, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, do you think that, based on your experience, that you think that they're external, or do you think that it could be something internal?
Yeah, like we were talking about just before, I think it's impossible to say. Mm-hmm. You know, but there are different models. There's a model that's internally generated, like it's in our own unconscious or in parts of the brain that aren't being activated. And we were kind of referring, to that, that model, the psychological model in the case of the beings that I saw. But you could also view it externally, like, these are angels or some kind of channels from the divine that have, entered into your consciousness and are transmitting information, from elsewhere, from God or from a different sphere or what have you. So the angels, the beings would be called angels, like in the Jewish, model anyway, like, Michael or Gabriel, healing angels, fortifying angels. Angels are the conduit, are the way that divine information is transmitted, to people. And so, for example, if you're tripping in some form or another, you might be more accessible to that kind of communication that originates in the outside and then manifests in your mind. Mm-hmm. And it could be God speaking to me through an angel. Now do you see?
Right. So a lot of people also report, trickster like archetypes or these elves. I know, do you think that when Terrence McKenna mentioned the machine elves that became an archetype and people do you think people started to envision that and then it became part of our culture in a way that it does color the experience?
Yeah, I think, that it does, to some extent. In a way that supports an idea I've been kind of playing with for the last couple of years about the placebo effect, if you keep an eye on the scientific literature, there's one new thing every month which psychedelics help. The list grows every month: eating disorders, marital strife, nature appreciation, alcoholism, tobacco abuse, depression. Think of them, some ways as super placebos. They produce the effect that you want and that the environment is kind of steering you in the direction of. So, if you start hearing about tricksters on DMT and then you trip, you're more likely, I believe, to encounter tricksters than may have been the case beforehand. Hmm. Rather than the exact mechanism of, for example, the more common appearance of the tricksters is to try and figure out what they are saying to us, what kind of information they're communicating with us about.
So do you think that's like the pre-notion of seeing something like that? Because I know there's a commonality where people, take it and they all kind of, they might have different experiences, but there's some kind of common thread where they see something similar. Do you think that's because of their prior knowledge of what they're expecting before going into that?
Well, it's their expectations for sure, but I think also it's, the raw material of the mind. You're only able to visualize things using visual components that you all that you already possess. You know, so you can, well, you can't think in concrete, for example. You think with your neurons and they produce, you know, they produce visions. So if you've never seen, something in your real life, you wouldn't be able to, kind of recreate it or use it in, mm-hmm. providing visual form, to the information which is being, transmitted to you, communicated to you more clearly. You know, so if you think about the components of the visions, is it a humanoid thing? Is it an insect-like thing? I believe, that those images aren't as important as the information that they contain. So it's almost like, garbing ideas, putting ideas in some kind of, visual cover. So you can perceive the cover. It draws your attention, it interacts with you. But it's covered that way, it looks that way. It's and garbed that way with visual components in order to communicate with you, to let you start thinking about something that you weren't aware of before.
In day-to-day consciousness, writing and language have a massive role on our consciousness and mindset, but do you think in the psychedelic realms, specifically the DMT realm, there is a level of understanding that transcends writing, language, and even symbols and symbolism? Because in DMT, the Spirit Molecule documentary, it seems like people just have this general, the people that were describing their experiences have this general knowledge or this understanding that happens that seems to transcend, like I said, all that writing, language, all that stuff.
When you say transcend, do you mean nonverbal, like it's
anything? Yeah, like not like almost like psychic in a way, I guess, or just an understanding that is not from this realm in which we experience from day-to-day consciousness, like a communication. Like I said, it could be, I guess, psychic or nonverbal or maybe even visual. I don't know.
You can approximate verbally certain experiences. I think it's not quite true that the essence of a psychedelic experience is only ineffable. I think you can say quite a bit about it as well. Mm. You might not be able to do a one-to-one correspondence, but you could get ideas across using words about your experience. You don't need to throw up your hand and say it's ineffable just because you don't have the vocabulary,
right,
or the interest in speaking about it or understanding it verbally. So in a way, the transcendence of thought is only a small part of it, but I think more profound or more convincing is the feeling of reality, of the reality sense of what you're witnessing. It just seems more real than real, so in a way it transcends everyday reality, at least our feeling about the reality of everyday reality compared to the DMT state.
Hmm. Yeah, and it seemed like a lot of those people's in the Spirit Molecule, a lot of their trip reports, I guess if you want to call them that, they do talk about like metaphysical or like metaphysics, things having to do with reality, the center point of everything, things that maybe even might bleed into like theoretical physics and stuff like that is what it sounds like. So I guess that's kind of what I was getting at. It sounds like people that maybe have never even thought about that stuff before are now being thrust, to think about some of those ideas.
Well, remember, that our volunteers were almost all college educated. A lot of them were psychologists and lawyers and doctors and things. Religious studies majors, Yeah, you know, so they were kind of spiritually oriented in the first place before they even volunteered. And in a way, you know, so one of the, you know, one of the reasons, you know, that they volunteered was in order to advance spiritually or have spiritual experiences.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it seems like DMT and maybe to a lesser extent salvia severely alter our perception of time. Do you think there's any connection to the dimensional space-time during these experiences, or do you think that this is just our biological perceptions that are being altered during those experiences?
Well, you should also mention 5-methoxy-DMT. Along with your salvia and with DMT.
Sure.
Yeah, it's smoked, very fast acting. You leave your body. It's quite intense, quite short as well. So what was your question? I wasn't quite
sure. So like you have time space, you know, like, you know, you know, you have the thing that is time space, and then you, the fourth dimension, and then you have our perceptions of time, which get altered. You know, we have adrenaline rushes, or somebody has a near-death experience, or a psychedelic experience, or, you know, anything that alters our perception of time. So do you think that there's any correlation in these experiences to some thing that we don't understand about the universe yet? Or do you think that that is just our perception of this thing that we call time-space?
Well, yeah, boy, I don't really know. That's a good question. Well, you know, there are studies of the brain's perception of time. I'm not familiar with the research, you know, but I've seen it, that, you know, people are, you know, looking at how the brain tells time. You know, so you would think in, you know, that case, you take a, you know, psychedelic, you're in some naturally altered state, it might affect the brain's ability to keep track of time. You know, but if you want to, you know, explain things from a top-down model, a more metaphysical model, you could say that you entered into a different, you know, time-space continuum, or you were able, you know, to apprehend it as a result of, you know, tripping, you being in an altered state. Yeah, you could perceive what was out there all along, but you weren't able, you know, to without... without tripping, or it just could be your brain or some combination.
Yeah,
I think it turned out to be.
I think about it a lot, and obviously I think about like time dilation. The more gravity there is, the more time slows down and all that kind of stuff, and how we interact with that. So yeah, I find that to be one of the more fascinating parts of psychedelic experiences. Do you think there's any molecule or psychoactive compound on Earth that is more potent or similar to DMT that is yet to be discovered, or do you think DMT's going to be the holy grail when it's all said and done?
I mean, I don't know what's, you know, not out there, or what is out there.
I just meant from like a philosophy of science standpoint, that we're all always discovering new things, we're always looking for that next paradigm shift, we're always pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, I think that's true, but still, we're just beginning to, you know, glimpse what the function of DMT could be, its regulation in the brain. So I think there's a lot to be learned from DMT itself.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is there anything that you've uncovered recently or researched or found interesting recently that, you know, whether it be somebody else's research or something that you've stumbled upon in the last year or so or a couple years that you find fascinating regarding this whole topic?
Yeah, well, so scientifically, you know, there's stuff going on, and especially this last 18 months is, you know, commercially what's been going on. You know, scientifically, I think I must have, you know, mentioned that University of Michigan paper, you know, because we spoke last year, and that paper came out in 2019.
Yeah.
Which spoke about the, you know, synthesis of DMT in mammalian brain. You know, co-localization of the two necessary enzymes. And the concentrations of DMT were quite high in the brain, as, you know, comparable to, you know, the levels of known neurotransmitters like serotonin or like dopamine. You know, so I think, you know, the hunt is on for improving a DMT neurotransmitter system in the mammalian brain. You know, you would wonder what that would be responsible for. Well, the hallmark of DMT is the feeling of being more real than real. So it could be this DMT neurotransmitter system regulates our sense of reality, which would be, you know, kind of cool. I mean, it would be in a way the endomatrix. It's, you know, kind of engarbing our ongoing experience with a particular spectrum of perception. You know, so I think, you know, once you can, you know, turn on the DMT neurotransmitter system or turn it off, I think we'll start to look more, you know, carefully at, you know, what is reality, you know, what is real, you know, and you could do, you know, knockout animals that didn't produce any DMT. You could, you know, block the enzymes which are required for DMT synthesis, you know, so you can knock out those genes. And you could breed animals that didn't produce any DMT, which would be a very strange experience, I think. Or you'd be able to turn it on, you know, activate your levels, which would, in a way, if they got to what is seen with injection, you know, it would be disembodied as well. You know, so I think the regulation of the DMT, you know, neurotransmitter system, if one exists, is going to be a, you know, just a rabbit hole of scientific and metaphysical discussion.
Yeah, you mentioned the U of M study from 2019. I think John Dean was the one studying all that. And shout out to John Chavez, who made the DMT Quest documentary. We've had him on the show before, too. They talk about all that stuff in that documentary. You're in that documentary as well. Do you think, you know, I think part of the, there was three discoveries associated with that, and you mentioned a couple of those. And I think last time we talked, it was just a new study, and I think we've just briefly touched on the fact that it was produced in, you know, the whole brain and not just the pineal gland is what we were talking about on the episode we did before. But there's also this other idea that it could be contained, or it is contained in our spinal fluid and probably more prevalent in the body than we even expected before. I know there's a study, I think Stephen Barker did at LSU, and he found levels of DMT increased in animal brains when LSD was administered. So many psychedelics may not even create these endogenous hallucination. It's called the endogenous hallucinogen neuronal system agonist theory, which then that stimulates the release of endogenous hallucinogens. But I guess the study never got published, and there's really no funding for a lot of this kind of science going on.
Well, you know, with the commercialization of DMT among other psychedelics, I think it'll, you know, boost, you know, basic research as well. You know, so I think, it's an interesting, you know, question. Do the other psychedelics, you know, work at least, you know, partially, you know, through the release of endogenous DMT? Yeah, that'd be, you know, quite interesting.
Yeah, no, I think that is kind of interesting. And I mean, it's so weird that we produce it in our bodies. And given the fact that there are so many psychoactive compounds out there, the one that is probably the most potent is the one that we produce. As you know, again, that goes back to what you were mentioning, that could give us a better picture of, you know, what's going on with reality and the metaphysics and, you know, the mind and everything like that. So, let's see here. I think we touched on this last time, but that 2013 rodent study where they induced a rodent into cardiac arrest, and then they found higher levels of DMT produced, which obviously you've speculated, other people have speculated. Is this what's at the core of the near-death experience? Is it an endogenous chemical release, or is it a combination of things? You know, how do you feel about that now, looking back at all these studies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that study that you demonstrated elevated levels in the dying brain is also from 2019. Yeah, so they induced a cardiac arrest in the rodents and, you know, looked at their, you know, brains. And the concentrations of DMT went up, especially in the visual cortex. of the dying animal. So that supports in a way a role of endogenous DMT in the near-death state. So that's an important avenue of future research. What that represents, is it a gateway or a curtain to death? It's kind of more speculative about what that may lead to, but at the very least, the state itself is the last thing that you're aware of before you die. Once you die, we have no idea what that's like. But if DMT is released at the time of death, that would be the last thing you'd be aware of, is entering into a DMT state.
Interesting. Shout out to the Dreaming Jaguar. Shout out to RN. Shout out to 4.5 Fingers. Maurice, do you want to give your little thought on dying and the DMT release?
I've always been in the camp that when you do pass on, that is a bridge into the next realm, if you will. So,
but don't you think that it traps you in there forever or something that feels like eternity? Isn't that? I feel like you've said that before.
I didn't necessarily say that, but when you're in a dream state, time seems to last a lot longer than what actually is going on. So if you're dreaming for 5 minutes, you wake up, it feels like you were in there for a day or a week or whatever. Right. But in reality, in this realm, you were only in that for 5 minutes. So yeah, one of my thoughts or theories would be that as you're getting ready to pass on, that the flood of that DMT, which is it's interesting that we're starting to do more tests and see that it is being released in animals and stuff like that nearing their death, that you would be somehow trapped, not I wouldn't say trapped, but it would help you ease into the next phase of whatever existence is. Again, that's coming from someone that's probably more spiritual, I know, than Michael maybe, but that's kind of my thought.
You're saying I'm not spiritual, bro? No.
Them's fighting words.
No, mystical. Yep. Maurice is definitely
good,
a little bit more mystical.
Cousins,
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a romantic thought for sure.
What do you mean romantic?
Well, in the sense that would be the transit, like having this transcendent hallucinations or psychedelic experience could be, like, let's say consciousness does survive death in some fashion or another. I mean, we know where does the mind go? We know about physical things, and how the universe kind of works in that regards. But what do we know about the mind and consciousness? We don't really know a ton. So I think it would be romantic to think that would be the bridge or the transitional point into some next level or of consciousness or something like that.
Well, it could also be true.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, I'm not discounting that at all. I was just saying I romantic in the sense that,
there's something more than this.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything that could prove that, especially in the science realm, would be very nice and reassuring, which I don't know if that's ever going to be presented. And that's where, I guess, faith would come into play to a degree.
Yeah, we don't know what it's like to be dead. I mean, we know what it's like to be near death, but nobody knows what it's like to be dead. But it's still, it seems as if you're in a hallucinatory, world as your last awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a role for DMT in that hallucinatory state, it's interesting to think of giving DMT as a dry run for death, or at least for the near-death state. You can induce it and you can learn to negotiate, within it.
Yeah, that's part of a lot of rituals and mysteries from the ancient world and even some of the modern world, this idea of dying and coming to grips with your own death before it even happens. And I think that usually, if you look at like ancient Greece and the Eleusinian mysteries or the sacred mushroom rituals in Mesoamerica, or a lot of these things kind of bring that up as well. We do have a question from the Dreaming Jaguars. They are asking, are you aware of the first extended state trials at Imperial College that have just finished? 5 test subjects have undergone 5 sessions of around 30 minutes of breakthrough state.
Oh, no. I haven't heard from that group for maybe a month.
Okay.
Yeah, they asked some questions. They told me they were, you know, well underway.
Okay.
I didn't get information. Well, that's very good. That's great news. Five people in a breakthrough stage for 30 minutes. That's pretty exciting.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. And I know, I think they're working on trying to interview one of the people that had that experience as well. I don't know when that'll happen, but I know that that's something that they might have been working on there. So, yeah, I mean, I think when you look at that whole thing, that's fascinating too. So, you know, what's happening for more than 5, 10, 15 minutes, you know, when you get to 30 minutes, and then what kind of effect would that have on you when you came back? Would you have some sort of altered consciousness from being deep in there? Or, you know, I don't know if you have any speculations on that.
Well, I think in a lot of ways, it'll be like drinking ayahuasca. Mm. I mean, if you drink enough ayahuasca, you have enough, you know, DMT in your brain that's as, you know, high as you need to get completely out there. You know, there's the complicating factor of the beta carbolines, the harmine and the harmaline. You know, yeah, but I've drunk some, you know, high doses of ayahuasca. And at the higher, you know, doses, it's a full-on DMT experience. And it waxes and wanes over a few hours. So I think in a lot of ways, the extended state will be like that. You know, the advantage, though, of an extended state, an intravenous extended state, is you could turn it on and you can turn it off and you can, you know, moderate the dose, you know, the level, you know, that you're at on a, you know, kind of minute-to-minute basis. Mm. Or your 5 minute to 5 minute basis. So that's a valuable advantage over ayahuasca.
I know that there, I don't know, I think it was Andrew Gallimore who is, I don't know what it's called. I think it's something having, it's Salvinorin B, but it's like an extended, like methoxy version of that, where somebody, that one sounds to me like that could induce maybe some psychological stuff, just because I've done Salvi. I know, you know, I haven't done it in a while, but when I was younger, I did it a decent amount of times, enough to know that, yeah, it's pretty intense. And I don't think it's as pleasurable as a lot of the serotonergic receptor psychedelics. And do you have a feeling on something like that, like an extended salvia trip?
Yeah, I'm not that crazy about, you know, salvia either. Hmm. Well, you know, a friend of mine in LA was the guy who discovered that you can, you know, vaporize and inhale Salvinorin A. You know, it's pure compound. And right. He sent me some. And I took about, you know, 10 times the, you know, the dose.
Right.
You know, like it was, you know, brand new. You know, nobody knew about it. He said, oh, you know, try it out. And it was a very small quantity. You know, potency-wise, it's much more potent than DMT. You know, the amount of material required, you know, for the, you know, the full-on intoxication. Yeah, you know, so the first, you know, vape didn't work at all. Then I just, you know, poured all of it into the pipe. And it was terrible. It was just horrifying.
Yeah.
It just put the fear of God into me. I mean, it was the most terrifying thing of my life.
Yeah, very repeaty, very fractally. But yeah, there is some like negative stuff that comes up in those two, and not like a negative work through it therapeutic way. To me, at least, it was more, like you said, kind of terrifying at different points. And I know they used to sell, when we were younger, at head shops, 32X, 25X,
yep.
You know, the extracts, they would sell it as like incense at head shops when we were younger. I think it's illegal now, but.
Yeah, until it got to 100X.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a diabolic demonic energy that it, you know, seems to contain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people that I know that really like it, you know, they have got kind of a hard edge about them, at least, you know, most of them.
There is a feeling of everybody's out to get you when under that, so that's strange.
I was, you know, thinned out and stretched and being incorporated into this pant leg of this, you know, 40-foot guy that had appeared in my living room. Ooh. Yeah, and I couldn't resist.
Do we have a new sound bite? Is that what's going on?
Maurice is about to make the next clip right now. No, so I do find that interesting, though, because...
Yeah, so an extended state like that, I don't think would really, you know, have much merit.
All right, folks, sorry about that. We got cut out for a second, but we are back. Maurice, you had your question.
Yeah, I was just asking about the movie Enter the Void. I wanted to see if you have seen it and what your thoughts were, how realistic it was, and pretty much just what you thought of that.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting movie. It's about a guy that's on DMT. He's trapped in a bathroom in a Tokyo nightclub, and he's shot and killed, and then he goes through the Bardos. The beginning was intriguing. It was quite thrilling, exciting, pretty accurate, gangsters and drug dealers and things. The extended travel through the Bardos kind of lost me, but still, anything that helps get people to know more about DMT and more people to know about it is a good thing. The Wachowskis, that TV series called Sense8, the first episode of Smoking DMT, that's featured. And a few months ago, there was a new release, a sci-fi time space travel film, which features two stars, a black guy and a white guy. And it involves ayahuasca and the pineal and the brain and DMT and things like that. So it is getting more mainstream. Still, compared to mushrooms and LSD and whatnot, it still occupies kind of a niche position.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Maurice knows all the obscure, weird, esoteric films. He's always sending me stuff to check out where I'm like,
I enjoy the films that you watch them and then you might not really understand what's going on. You have to kind of think about it. I like that.
What's the one you told me that I watched, Upstream Color or something
Upstream
Color. Well, I wrote a review on Amazon of Upstream Color. And I got a note from somebody saying, you figured it out. You got it. So,
wow. I'll have to read that review.
Yeah, Maurice is going to have to.
I have my own thoughts, but it's kind of left up in the air. And I like movies that may or may not have a meaning. Well, it's good that that the director has a meaning for it, but I also like them when they're open ended, where you can create your own meaning. And it happens a lot with music, where you listen to a song and you might feel a mood one day, and that song might mean something to you that one day, and then you feel something different, and then it has a different meaning to you. I like those open ended type of things. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was that alien one I told you about with Jesse Eisenberg recently?
I forget
the name of it. That one was pretty weird too. Interesting.
Well, we're both
stuff.
Scientific buffs.
Is there anything, any other movies that you've seen recently that you'd recommend that to kind of touch on these topics?
Oh, let's see. We just watched The Mind Hunters.
Michael loves that. Yeah,
I love that series. It's great.
It's pretty good. We're now watching Blacklist with James Spader.
I think my wife used to watch that. I haven't gotten into that yet. It's called Clickbait. It's the first thing that Vince from Entourage has been in since. It's one of those things you won't guess, because I'm a pretty good guesser of what's going to happen at the end. You definitely won't guess what happens at the end of this, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I gotta find your review on Upstream Color though, because I want to see your thoughts on that one. That's like one of my favorite movies. I love Shane Carruth, because his first movie Primer, he only had $6,000, and it's a time travel movie. I highly recommend that one if you haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it twice, actually. It's quite
nice.
Good.
Yeah. Well, you almost have to see it at least twice, because it's a mind messer.
So in terms of back to the DMT stuff, I think last time we talked a little bit about DMT and the Soul of Prophecy. Is that something you're still theorizing on and hypothesizing on? Is that whole stuff about DMT and possible explanations that don't involve obviously ingesting it or smoking it?
Well, I do spend a lot of time in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament. I can show you my bookshelves, maybe, if it doesn't mess things up. Let's see here. Yeah, so I've got a lot of books, okay. and they're pretty much all the Hebrew Bible and commentaries on it and discussions of selected topics. Yeah, so I spent a lot of time studying the Hebrew Bible, and I came to that ultimately, through my DMT work. Buddhism wasn't that great a spiritual model. The scientific models were, kind of dry. And Judaism and the notion of the prophetic experience as laid, down in the Hebrew Bible is, very interesting. And it's, the content which I've been fascinated with a lot, more, than the mechanisms. The mechanisms are, in a way, wiring and plumbing and that kind of thing. And it isn't as interesting as, what information is being, conveyed, through that mechanism. And you can access at least a lot of the information verbally, and you can write it down and you can read it and you can think about it. So, I study the Hebrew Bible every day. There's a cycle. You can read the first five books every year if you stay on schedule. And
I know there's a recent discovery. We did it as part of sometimes we'll read the archaeology and science news and stuff like that. There was a recent discovery regarding the Dead Sea Scrolls that I think they found it in the Cairo Geniza, I think is how you pronounce it, which is a manuscript with all sorts of knowledge in there. And they found that the Dead Sea Scrolls were most likely not just the Essenes hiding out in the desert, but most likely that was a place where celebrations or this one specific event would happen, almost like people would have a pilgrimage and come there and all congregate there. But I found that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, the Dead Sea Scrolls are great. They give you an idea of what was going on toward the end of the Second Temple, the beginning of Christianity. There's even a few mentions about Jesus and some of that material. And their versions of the Bible are different slightly. The book of Isaiah, there's a version which was being used then that is substantially different than the current version.
Interesting. So let's wrap it up here. Really appreciate your time. We are going to do a Patreon segment with you. Some people sent in some questions and we're going to try and answer those. But to anybody watching or listening, please go subscribe and check out Rick's YouTube channel. If you type in Rick Strassman, it's the first channel that pops up, or we have the link all the way down below the video and the information. So you can go click on there and it'll send you there. Also check out his books, DMT, The Spirit Molecule, DMT, The Soul Prophecy. I have the links down below to those books as well. And his website as well. Is there anything else you want to plug?
That's the standard material. I've got a face on Facebook as well, so you check it out. You like me?
I know you post a lot of stuff. I follow you on Facebook as well. I know that you're always posting science articles relating to the stuff and just interesting stuff in general. So go find them on there. And before we get on out of here, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For just $2 a month, you'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments like the one we're about to do right now with Rick and answer some questions. And just go check it out. And one more thing, head on over to indrasweb.org. This is the social media platform we created to connect open minds. Sign up for a profile and start hypothesizing, theorizing, and speculating. And one more thing, we do have a shirt that we will auction off. If anybody wants to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, take a screenshot of it and that basically enters and send it to our email, which is found on our website or the link down below, and it'll enter you in for the free shirt. So check that out. And thank you, Rick, so much for your time. And it was great to have you back on.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure. One question. Do I need to stay on this?
No. We'll wrap it up here, and then we're just going to record the other thing separately. So just, hang on where you are now, and you don't have to do anything. I'll do everything from my end. So.
Okay, so you'll be reading me the questions, but on Skype?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, so much. We love everybody. Stay safe out there, and we will catch you next time. Peace.